hello. Welcome to the Fitness Simplified podcast. I'm your host, Kim Schlag. It has been a long time since I have said those words. We have been on a bit of a hiatus here at the Fitness Simplified podcast, and I'm going to tell you in the beginning of this episode where on earth I have been, but the podcast is back, and I have a whole boatload of incredible guests lined up for you in the coming months. We've got subject matter experts, we've got doctors, we've got coaches who are going to help you with all things fitness and nutrition. Before we jump into this episode today, which, by the way, the topic we're going to talk about today is how the heck do you know when it's time to adjust your calories? I get a lot of questions on this. That's what we're going to talk about today after I do a bit of a life update for you. But before we do that, I do want to tell you I have made something for you. It's one of the reasons I haven't been around as much. I've been working on a little something special for you, totally free. It's a gift for you. You can grab it at the link in the show notes. It is a guide all about menopause nutrition and exercise. The Menopause Nutrition and Exercise Quick Start Guide is going to help you know the three key concepts you must understand to be successful at weight loss in midlife, the four kinds of exercise you should be doing in perimenopause and menopause, the two types of fat you should be incorporating, and the one type of fat you should be reducing for optimal heart health in midlife. Basically, this guide is going to take you in a really succinct way and show you how to eat and exercise to support optimal health in midlife, empowered aging in midlife, and weight loss in midlife, if that is your goal. All right, you can grab that at the link in the bio, and let's get on to the episode. Let's do it. Hello, hello. I am thrilled to be back recording episodes of the Fitness Simplified podcast. I have so many great episodes coming your way. I've been interviewing incredible guests, and today I'm doing this solo episode, which is actually going to be the very first one released before you even hear any of the episodes with my incredible guests. So today I have a hot topic for you, something that I get asked about a ton. The question is, when should I adjust my calories? How often should I do it? Why should I do it? When should I not do it? And that's what we're going to cover today. Before we get there, though, I want to do a bit of a life update because it has been so long since I have been with you. There's a lot going on, lots to chat about. So let's hit that first. So the first thing I want to talk about is where on earth this podcast has been. I've been recording this podcast, I want to say it's been 4 years now, maybe even 5 years that I've been recording this podcast. And for the last, it's been a long time. There were close to weekly uploads, if not weekly uploads year round. In March, I did an episode fully intending to continue doing episodes, but I firmly believe that the idea of balance in our life is way overrated, right? There's this idea that we should have balance, work-life balance, just balance in general, and I haven't found it to be true. There just seem to be seasons, and in certain seasons, I dial up parts of my life and dial back others because I just don't have the bandwidth for all of them. If I was constantly looking for exact equality among everything in my work, like giving all of the pieces of my job the same amount of attention to do what I do, there's a lot of pieces. Like I have the actual, I'm coaching people. I have the building the curriculum. I have recording social media. I have writing social media. I have doing DMs and emails. I have recording the podcast, making YouTube videos, collaborating with people. There's so many parts of it. And then just the part of actually like running the business piece. So there's a lot of it. And if I gave all of those my equal attention all the time, I would be shortchanging some of them. And then when you add into the part of like, okay, that's just my work. And now I've got my whole life on top of that, you know, family, friends, responsibilities in the community, all of these different things, just taking care of, you know, daily life tasks and being a good daughter, all of these different things. If I tried to give equal attention to all of them, no matter what was going on in my life, it wouldn't actually give me what I need and give the people around me what they need at all times. And so I really subscribe to this idea of dialing things up. And when you dial certain things up, there's only so much bandwidth you have, time, energy, attention. And so you have to dial other things back. And I really do look at it as these dials versus trying to have equal balance among each thing. And this season starting, this last really since the beginning of the year, has been a season where lots of things have had to be dialed up in my personal life. And so I needed to dial some things back in my work. And I was kind of trading off what those things would be. And when March hit and Fitter After 40 launched, and I really needed to dial up the amount of attention that I gave that program for those 8 weeks, it just ended last week. Because I had, you know, I had, how many women did we have in there? 60 some women in there that I was coaching through that program week after week. And so I really put a lot of energy there. And I wanted to keep the energy and a focus I had on other aspects of my business. I was really working on actually improving Fitter After 40. We were working on some updates to the programming, those kinds of things. And I was continuing to do my social media. And at some point, something had to give. Because in the past, I will tell you, there have been stages of my career where what gave were things outside of my business. And so I was working, and I'm not even joking when I tell you that I was working 18-hour days. And that was difficult. I will still say I do think it was necessary in that phase of my business building. And I'm happily out of that phase and do not intend to return to it. So something had to give in the business. And I just decided that the thing that was going to give for a short period of time was going to be the podcast. I did not intend for it to be that long of a break. So that's where I've been with the podcast. I'm back. I'm running. I do love this part. I love bringing you in connection with experts in fitness and nutrition and menopause. And we've got a lot of that coming your way. And I also love this longer format for me to coach you through all different topics, for me to really educate you on various topics that, you know, yes, you can watch an Instagram reel that's 15 seconds, 60 seconds and read a caption, but it just doesn't allow me the time and space to give as much depth to these topics that I know you're really interested in. So I'm excited to be back on the podcast. All right, next life update. If you've been around for a while, you know that I have had a lot of pain in my foot. So it started several years ago. Uggs. Uggs are the cause of my foot pain. If you've ever had plantar fasciitis and you weren't sure what the cause of it was, look to your footwear. The first time I had plantar fasciitis, it was in my left foot. It was a couple of years before the pandemic. It was at least 6 months before the pandemic. It may have been a year and 6 months before the pandemic. I had, no, it must have been before. Yeah, it was definitely before then because I was still doing one-on-one clients. I don't do one-on-one clients very much anymore. I have two one-on-one clients currently. Dr. Jen Gunter is a one-on-one client of mine. She's been my one-on-one client for a couple of years now. And Dr. Shelby Harris, Sleep Doc Shelby on Instagram, she is my one-on-one client. Those are my only two one-on-one clients. But back in the day when I was doing a lot of one-on-one clients, one of the things that I would do is message my clients via the Marco Polo app while I walked. So I would walk in the neighborhood and I would watch their videos to me and then I would respond to them. And some days I had hours of this to do. And one fall day, it was a beautiful fall day, but it was cool enough that I was wearing my sparkly Uggs, which I always loved, and it makes me sad that I can't wear them anymore. And I wandered my neighborhood, nice slow pace, wearing my Uggs, for 2 hours, Marco Poloing with my one-on-one clients. And when I got back home, my foot was bugging me a little bit, but guess what I was doing that night? I was going to the corn maze with my family and it was getting colder. And so I still needed to wear something nice and warm on my feet. So I put on my old pair of sparkly Uggs that could get muddy if it was muddy. And we went to the corn maze, which was a couple of hours. Again, a few more hours of wandering around in the dark in the corn maze. And by the next day, my foot was really in pain. I'd never had foot pain before. Didn't know what it was. Turns out it was plantar fasciitis in my left foot. It took me a good long time to get that healed. Didn't know what I was doing. Eventually got physical therapy for it. And it's been better ever since. It took a while. It took a good bunch of months. Well, fast forward. I knew the Uggs were an issue, but I didn't wear them very much on long things. I would wear them a ton, but just around the house here and there, a little shopping trip here, not a lot. But last winter, I went to Pittsburgh to take my daughter and her friend. My husband and I took them up to Tor Pitt for looking at colleges. And I had no intention of wearing my Uggs all day. I just didn't. I didn't think we were walking anywhere. It was an unseasonably warm day, which was my downfall. It had been really cold. So I thought we were going to just do a little walk here, a little walk there. The day I actually hurt my foot was not even the day of the tour. It was the day we arrived early, and the four of us were just going to wander around a little bit, see a little bit of this, get a lay of the land. It was never intended to be a big walking day, but it was supposed to be cold, so I wore the Uggs. Well, we ended up walking 15,000 steps, and at one point, we stopped at a pharmacy. I got some different inserts because my inserts felt like they were not helping, And ever since that time, I've been fighting with my right foot, not my left foot, with my right foot. It just flares up and it goes down and then it flares up and then it subsides. I've worked with my physical therapist. It gets better, but it doesn't ever heal. And so I'm constantly having to like dial back my steps. I'm constantly saying to my family things like, can somebody, you know, I've kind of walked as much as I can today. I'm laying in bed and I need to go downstairs and like get my AirPods. Can somebody get them for me? Like my foot's really hurting me. I wake up every morning. That's a really common thing with plantar fasciitis, is that when you wake up in the morning that your foot hurts. So I would wake up in the morning every morning with a little bit of pain, and it was always how much pain. And I could get it really manageable, but I couldn't quite get it out of pain. This last week, I actually went to see a podiatrist about something else. It's a gross word. I hate the word. I don't know why they call them this. I had a corn on my toe. Is that not the grossest thing? Why do they call it a corn? And a corn, if you don't know what it is, it's like a weird pressure point that starts building on your foot. And it's like a callus, but with internal pressure, and they're incredibly painful. And I started having a corn last December. They're very common. The doctor was telling me that most people, as they get older, just end up with corns. It's just how it works. It's just our foot anatomy. And I wish I had gone in sooner. If you have a corn, just go into your podiatrist. He solved it for me. I've been shaving it down on my own, adjusting my footwear, all these different things, trying to help this dang corn. I went into the podiatrist about the corn because I was tiring of fighting it. He had shaved it like with his sharp knife. And he's like, look, you can't do what I'm doing at home. It was like 2 minutes and I could immediately sense the pressure was gone. He said, if it ever happens again, you just come back and I can fix it again. So there's that. If you have a corn, just go to your podiatrist. While I was there, I brought up my foot pain from my plantar fasciitis. And he said, you've tried all the things, you've done all the right things. I think I'm going to recommend that you get a cortisone shot if you're open to it. I've had a cortisone shot in my shoulder many, many years ago. People really poo-poo cortisone shots. They say they're not great. You shouldn't get them. They're just masking the pain, all these different things. But I really wanted to give it a try just to see what would happen. And he did impress upon me the idea that the cortisone shot was not to take the place of the physical therapy, that continuing to build up the strength in my muscles and my foot is going to help prevent the pain from returning. But he really thought that this might be the thing that kind of pushes me over that edge of being able to actually get out of pain. And I have to tell you, I'm just over the moon because I did this. It's been a week ago now. It's been a week ago that I did this. And the first 48 hours after, I was in a little bit more pain. Because he put the shot in my heel, which was fine. I don't mind shots. A lot of people mind shots. I don't mind shots. No shade if you do mind shots, but there's a lot of other medical things I mind. Shots, I'm fine. So I just watched and he put the shot in. But then he neglected to tell me while he was in there, he was going to do some dry needling. So he just essentially took the needle and he kept smashing it in, like shoving, 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 shoving. It was like 8 times. He shoved that needle into my heel. And I was like, at one point I grabbed my head. I was like, am I going to pass out? And so when he stopped, I said to him, I said, you know, I've never had a shot like that before. And that's when he told me he was dry needling. I was thinking that would have been a good thing to warn me about. So anyway, it was very tender for 48 hours. And then since that time, zero pain, in my heel. None. I have not had to say one time like, oh, my bad foot, this, you know, dial back my steps because they went up one day, bring them down another day. Like it feels great. I'm being very intentional about continuing my physical therapy. And I really, knock on wood, I'm hoping that I won't have to constantly think about my feet. I'm going to keep wearing great shoes, nice supportive feet. I'm not going to look for many, many years. If I was wearing a nice outfit, I would wear a sandal that had basically, it was like cardboard is what the bottom of the sandal was. I thought they looked cute. Never doing that again. Always going to wear supportive footwear. But I'm hoping that my foot is better enough. My daughter would really like me to run a 5K with her in the fall. The guys in our family are doing the Rocky Run in Philadelphia, down at the steps of the Philadelphia Art Museum where the big Rocky statue is, you know, Rocky Balboa. And it ends there and they're doing a 10K. And my daughter would like to try. No, they're not doing a 10K. They're doing a 10 miler. My daughter would like to do the accompanying 5K and she wants me to do it with her. And it was just no possibility with my foot pain that I could do that. And look, I'm not a runner. I'm going to actually have to train to run a 5K. So knock on wood, that goal is in my future. Here's hoping. Speaking of my training, here's what else I'm working on. I'm a big proponent of having training goals. to be working on so that your training feels interesting and exciting and fun and you're motivated to get into the gym. I really like that. And so for me, right now, one of the big goals I had had was the two goals I've been working on are increasing my deadlift to match my personal best and then exceed my personal best. And the same thing with my hip thrust. These are the two goals that I set like a month ago. I decided this is what I wanted to do. The training I had been doing, was really hypertrophy training. There was no deadlifting. There was no conventional deadlifting. There was no sumo deadlifting. There was Romanian deadlifting. So I've still been doing a deadlift pattern, but there was no deadlifting from the floor. And that's the first time I haven't had deadlifting in my training, unless I was injured, in many, many years. Like since like I was 45 and I'm 52 now, this is the first time, except for small chunks of time, if I was injured, that I didn't have actual deadlifting training in my program. I love doing it. I love training powerlifting style, but I was just trying something different. So I was doing this, hypertrophy training program that had zero conventional or sumo deadlifting in it. And then I got kind of to the point where I was like, I miss it. I want to do it again. And so I just started adding them back in, I changed my programming. I'm doing deadlifting again. I'm doing some sumo training. And I thought I'd start nice and, nice and light for me and kind of work my way up. I'm at 215 pounds for three sets of five right now at 215. My one rep max is 285. So 285 is where I want to get. Well, I want to beat that. I'm hoping by the end of the year. We'll see. If it's not by the end of the year, it's not by the end of the year. I will say it might take a lot for me to get up there. When I was, hitting 285 at powerlifting meets before, I found that a really challenging goal. Like it was hard. Like every 5 pounds, increasing by 5 pounds was a big fight. It was a big fight to get 5 pounds heavier. So that's one of my fun goals. Mom, my other goal, I had a goal and I just reached it. I reached it that fast because I was also going to beat my hip thrust at lifetime PR. My hip thrust lifetime PR was 385 pounds. I always thought it would be cool to hit 400 pounds in a lift, any lift. And hip thrust was definitely my best shot at that. As women, we definitely have stronger glutes than other body parts. And so I was like, okay. And I really like hip thrust training. People poo-poo it. People are like, oh, it's so hard to set up, which it is, or it's not effective, which is ridiculous. It's absolutely effective if you can get around the it's hard to set up part. I love it. I do love it. And the reason it's hard to set up is because you're putting so much weight on the bar. Like it took me a really long time to get the weight on the bar as I was increasing the weight as I was training today. So what I decided to do today was test my one rep max. I've had hip thrust training in my training all these months and years. I haven't ever taken hip thrust training out, but I was definitely working in higher rep ranges above six. I haven't had anything below six reps in a long time. I was doing a lot more six reps, eight reps, even 10, 12 reps. So I hadn't really trained in that heavier rep range. And so I was curious to see where would my one rep max be right now? How far away am I from 385 pounds? And testing my one rep max for hip thrusting is not super taxing. Testing your one rep max for deadlifts can be very taxing on your central nervous system. So it's not something I would do more than just a couple times a year. And I knew there's no way I'm up where I was before. So I just decided not to test my one rep max, but I did test my one rep max for my hip thrust today. And I started out at light. I started out lighter, doing some warm-up sets. And then I went up to 300. And that went up fast. And so then I did 320 and that went up fast. So I jumped up to 350 and that went up pretty darn fast. And when 350 went up pretty darn fast, I decided I was just going to jump up to 385 and see, like, can I do 385? And yes, I can. I can do 385. At which point I decided to just go for 400 and see what would happen. First time up, I got it up and I was really excited. And then I watched the playback and I was just shy of full lockout. Like it was questionable. At first I was like, maybe I got it. Maybe I didn't. But I wanted to be really sure. I wanted to be really, really sure that I was at full hip extension. So I waited 5 minutes and I did it again. And this time it's very clear on the video. I got 400 pounds fully up all the way locked out at full hip extension. So I already reached, so yay me, I reached my hip thrusting goal. So there's that. I think I will just keep hip thrusting in my program and work on, you know, increasing the reps I can do, with this heavier weight. And you look, I think hip thrusts are an amazing exercise for glute training. And so I'm going to keep those in, but yeah, I don't know that I'm definitely not going to keep going and seeing like, can I get 410, 420? And that's not that interesting to me. Like, I feel like getting a 400-pound hip thrust. Cool. Did it. So that's what's going on with my training. If you haven't considered a training goal, I would absolutely urge you to do it. And if you're like, I'd have no desire to lift that heavy, it doesn't have to be something heavy. It could be doing, you know, the heaviest 5 rep max squat you could do. It could be, you know, starting out by doing a squat with your body weight on the bar. It could be something with running. It could be, you know, beating your 5K time. It could be, learning how to do a double under. I've done, you know, learning how to do a pistol squat in the past. It could be push-ups. It could be one-arm push-ups. It could be pull-ups. It could be all different kinds of goals. It doesn't have to be just about lifting heavy, but for a lot of people that's fun. So absolutely, it could be getting a 2x your body weight deadlift. That's an excellent goal for anyone, or 1x your body weight squat, all different kinds of, great goals. I would encourage you to have a goal. It can really power your training. All right. So that's what's been going on with my training. And then the last bit of life update I want to talk about is my cut. Middle of December, right before Christmas, I decided to start a cut to lose some weight. Still working on losing those pounds I put on when I was very ill with COVID, and was on bed rest. I lost a big chunk of that, last year, but never quite finished losing it and, you know, put a couple of those pounds back on just with life. So I started right before Christmas, did hire a coach. I do like having a coach. If I'm going to be in a fat loss phase, I like having a coach. I like having somebody to check in with. It makes it work for me. That is my personality. I like knowing that at the end of every day, I'm going to be checking in with my coach. It works for me. So I did hire a coach. I hired a coach named Carrie Lee. Carrie's going to be on the podcast this summer. Really excited to have Carrie on. Awesome coach. If you're not following Carrie on Instagram and TikTok and all the places, definitely follow her. I'll put her handle in the show notes. So Carrie has been who I've been checking in with. So my update is I have lost 11 pounds since just before Christmas. And I'm really, really happy with that progress. Life has been lifing. There has just been so much to manage. You know, unbelievable tragedy in my personal life, incredible joy, a health crisis, and 11 pounds in just under 6 months with all of that happening is incredible. I was thinking I'd get about a pound a week, which wasn't unreasonable considering, look, I do this for a living. Like, I knew I could get a pound a week, but half a pound a week is amazing progress. And I tell people all that time. And so I'm happy with that half pound a week that I have gotten. And when I tell you about the rate of progress, and when I tell you a half pound a week is great, it doesn't mean that every week you should lose a half pound this week and a half pound that week and a half pound the next week. There were weeks that I lost a pound a week and there were weeks that I lost nothing. We're looking at on average. So when I average out this time, I have lost on average a half a pound per week. Some weeks faster, some weeks slower. You know, there was a full chunk of time I took off. I basically took off from February 12th to the middle of March to help my friend deal with the tragedy she was going through. So even including all of that, I'm still at half a pound per week. I'm really thrilled about that. I'm going to continue for the next several weeks to be in a deficit phase and maintenance phases because I have a lot of fun stuff coming up and I won't continue to remain in a deficit when I'm doing some traveling. But from now until the end of July, I'm going to be in a deficit when I'm home and life is per usual. When I'm traveling, I will not be in a deficit. And then I'm going to come out and be at maintenance for a good period of time and reevaluate. Do I want to be in a deficit again? I don't know. I have lots of feelings around that I haven't continued to work through, but I will keep you updated. All right. That is my life update. So let's dive into today's topic, which is how do I know if it's time to adjust my calories. So a couple of times when it's definitely a consideration. One time that you would want to consider adjusting your calories is if your goal changes. So for example, you're going to go from a deficit to maintenance, or if you want to go from maintenance to a surplus, or if you want to go from maintenance to a deficit. So if your goal changes, then it will be time to adjust your calories. That's time one. The next time that you could consider adjusting your calories, if you need a maintenance break. Why might you take a maintenance break? Well, you might take a maintenance break if you're feeling burnt out on being in a deficit. What that might look like is that you're struggling with more hunger, more cravings, low energy. If this sounds like you, coming up to maintenance can actually speed up the process of losing weight, not slow it down. And that might feel counterintuitive. You're like, wait a minute, if I'm bringing my calories up to maintain my weight, how am I speeding up my weight loss progress? Because once you take that break, you're going to be able to be more consistent with your deficit. So when you get back to your deficit, you will be able to make faster progress. And if you just kind of stayed in that deficit mindset and you were sometimes in a deficit and sometimes not in a deficit or not in a deficit at all, even though you were trying because you were just feeling really burnt out on it. I find this can happen for people at different times, this idea of needing a maintenance break. I've worked with clients in Fitter After 40 who've lost 35 pounds in 6 to 8 months before they felt they needed a maintenance break. I've worked with others who've lost 8 pounds in 8 weeks, and then they really felt like they needed that break. And in either case, taking the break is better than hanging out in that deficit mindset while without actually being in a true deficit, or almost being in a deficit some days being in a deficit and the progress is just super slow. It feels really demotivating. And so taking that maintenance break and then giving your deficit phase your full energy and attention after the break is really a winning strategy. And the break for maintenance can be short. Look, some people take a maintenance break as in I'm going on a vacation for a week or two. I'm going to be at a dedicated maintenance phase. And when I come back, I'll go back into my deficit. For some people, that's enough. Other people, they need, you know, longer than that, a month, 2 months. So consider adjusting your calories if you need a maintenance break. The third time to consider adjusting your calories would be if the calories you are using for your deficit are no longer working. And I want you to be really, really careful with this one. Macro coaches tend to adjust things very frequently, and it's just not necessary. So there's zero reason to just be like, oh, I'm going to adjust my fats up, but I'm going to adjust my carbs down. I'm just going to adjust my total calories. There is zero reason to be just willy-nilly adjusting things. I have had many, and when I tell you many, I mean many clients lose 50 plus pounds on the exact same calories that I gave them when they initially started with me. So they start with me, I set their calories based on a variety of factors, and they use those calories to over months lose 50 plus pounds without ever having to adjust them down. You don't just need to adjust calories because you've lost X number of pounds. Like there's not a marker like once you've lost 10 pounds, now you shave off 100 calories. Okay. We adjust calories based on results. So if the calories are no longer working, that is when you would consider adjusting them. And I want you to be really aware of the fact that that doesn't need to happen very often. If you are ready to adjust calories, it should be after a time when you've lost a significant amount of fat, as evidenced by the scale and or sizes and or inches. You do not need to adjust calories every 5 or 10 pounds down. If the calories aren't working anymore, that's when you would consider adjusting them. The first thing I would have you do before you even consider, the first thing I would have you consider is, are you making progress? Because a lot of times people aren't clear if they're making progress because they have unrealistic expectations. So look at your expectations. Are they realistic? Often people think their calories aren't working because they think they should be losing a pound per week or 2 pounds per week. And that is not realistic. If you are losing on average at least half a pound per week, you are making great progress. So considering like, oh, I need to adjust my calories because I'm not losing fast enough is actually based on faulty expectations, not the fact that there's anything actually wrong. So that's step number one to check. The next thing I'd have you check after looking at your expectations is, are you actually seeing any progress? If you are just using this scale, you are not looking at the full picture, especially if you are somebody who is lean, looking to get leaner. Look, if you have 100 pounds to lose, you have 70 pounds to lose, 50 pounds to lose, the scale should be going down as you're in a deficit. Absolutely. But if you're a person who has like 10 pounds to lose, 5 pounds to lose, it is quite possible, especially if you add strength training in at the same time, that the scale won't move very much, but that your inches go down significantly and that you look significantly leaner in your progress pictures and that the sizing of your clothes is changing. If you are seeing progress in those areas and you're not seeing as much progress on the scale and you're a leaner person looking to get leaner, it doesn't mean anything is wrong. It doesn't mean that any adjustment needs to be made. So really look at your full progress and make sure you're looking at it over a long enough chunk of time. I'm talking minimum 1 month. You should be comparing your results from this week to a month ago. So average your weekly weigh-in for 4 weeks ago. Okay, add up every weigh-in you had for the week, divide it by the number of weigh-ins you had. If you're weighing daily, that'll be, you add up all 7 weigh-ins, you divide by 7, that'll tell you your average week weight for 4 weeks ago, and do the same thing with this week, and then compare. Remember, you're looking for at least a half a pound per week on average. So if you've lost 2 pounds in that time, you're making excellent progress. Also, look at your inches from 4 weeks ago till now. Look at your average inches then and your average inches now. Look at your fit of your clothes over that period of time. Look at side-by-side progress pictures over that period of time. Where people go wrong is they're looking in really too small increments. They're looking what the scale said yesterday to today. They're looking at, you know, what inches said, you know, a week and a half ago till now, and they're really bloated. There are all kinds of factors that can happen in the short term that aren't going to happen in that longer term stretch. So really be comparing progress month to month. Okay, so if you've checked that you're expectations are appropriate, you've checked to see what kind of progress you are or are not making, and you're like, okay, I'm not really making any progress. Yes, I have appropriate expectations. What should I look at next? Once you've checked both of those things, expectations are in order, not making any progress, the next thing I would have you do before I even have you like possibly consider adjusting calories is to really look at your adherence. Check your adherence. What I mean by that is, have you been tracking your calories fully a minimum of 90% of the time the last 4 weeks, including evenings and weekends? I want you to go back and look at your tracker, like whether you use My Fitness Pal or Lose It, whatever it is. And I want you to see, do you have missed days? Do you have days that are only partially tracked? If you have not been tracking at least 90% of the time, you do not have the information you need to be adjusting calories. Track solidly, fully, minimum 90%. For 4 weeks before you consider adjusting anything. And then within that chunk of time, I want you to look at your consistency with your calorie targets, your consistency with your step targets, and your consistency with your protein targets. You need to be at least 80% consistent with all of those before you should consider adjusting your calories. When I say 80% consistent with your calorie targets, I mean while using a food scale to weigh your food, and while not taking unaccounted for licks, bites, intakes. So if you're like, well, I've been just kind of estimating using cups, using tablespoons, just eyeballing, you need to go full solid 4 weeks using a food scale with the calories you're using now. Okay. If you know that you kind of pick during the day and you just kind of guess and kind of put that on your tracker, 4 full weeks without doing that before you can adjust. Because for more people than not, what I'm talking about here is the issue. It's not that they need to adjust their calories. It's that they're eating more calories than they're actually counting. Okay. So if you have now done this and you're like, yep, I'm 80% consistency with my calorie targets. I'm using a food scale. I'm not lick, biting, and tasting and having those unaccounted for. Yes, I've been hitting my protein target. Yes, I've been hitting my step goals. I've been doing that. It's been more than 4 weeks. I have appropriate expectations. I'm definitely not making any progress. You could be ready to adjust your calories. Now, you're not going to adjust in big increments. We're not going to slash your calories. What I would consider having you do is take 100 calories off like 3 days per week and go for a couple of weeks and see what happens. If you're doing this, you should be somebody who has lost a considerable amount of fat. In inches, in scale, pounds on the scale. If you're adjusting your calories and you haven't really lost much yet, the issue is much more likely to be your adherence than your calories. I cannot emphasize that enough. But sure, there are some people and they've lost 40, 50, 60, 70 pounds, and they do need fewer calories. The other option is to increase your movement. So I like to look at that up to about 12,000 steps. I find 12,000 steps is still doable for people. It doesn't feel like it impairs their ability to enjoy their life. It's not like they're spending all day walking, but it can be useful. So if you're a person who's maybe you're getting 9 or 10,000 steps per day, you've lost a lot of weight, you've been making good progress and it's slowing down or you're not seeing anymore, you could, instead of reducing calories, you could try having your daily step goal at 12,000 steps per day. Seeing how that goes. Or you could take off 100 calories 3 times per week and see how that goes. The other option that I really only use with people who are very lean looking to get leaner, like they're quite lean and they're just looking to lose, you know, like a few more pounds. They're not even sure if the scale is going to move. They just want to get a little bit leaner, is to add in dedicated cardio sessions. So, you know, adding in 30 minutes of cardio, 45 minutes of cardio, 1, 2, 3 times a week is another option. Those are the three options I really do look at. But again, you have to go through all of those other steps first to really see and be very honest with yourself about all of those other steps before you just start adjusting calories. It will not help you to adjust your calories on paper or in your app if you're not actually hitting them. So let's say right now your calories are set at 1750 and you're not seeing any progress. If you take those calories down to 1650, if you're still not hitting them, you're not going to see any more progress. It's much better to dial in what you're actually eating with that 1750 calories than just move them down on paper or on the app. I hope that this has helped. Absolutely message me with any questions. You can hit me up in DMs. You can hit me up on email and we can continue this conversation further. Remember to grab the free guide that I've made for you. It's all about menopause, nutrition, and exercise. What are the highlights that you need to hit so that you can have, you know, healthy metabolism, healthy muscles, healthy bones, a healthy heart? And of course, we did talk about weight loss in that guide as well. It's totally free. It's done in a way that's going to be really easy for you to digest, and then hit me up with questions. Talk soon. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Fitness Simplified podcast. I hope you found it motivational, inspirational, educational, organizational. If you did find value in this episode today, it would mean a great deal to me if you would leave a rating and review on whatever podcasting platform you are listening to this episode on. It really does help to get this podcast in front of other people. Thanks so much for being here.